kijkers heeft blijkbaar die hem interessant vinden. Dat was een Amerikaan. Die ging de hele tijd naar coffeeshops en zo. Dus, die liep ook op Circus Band Festival zo een beetje te filmen en zo. Ik was echt verbijsterd. Ik was echt verbijsterd, want die loopt gewoon de hele dag alleen maar te streamen.
Je had toch ook zo'n man die in een soort 360 graden YouTube streamde vanuit Amsterdam elke dag. Die ook zelfs op de Patapoe Benefiet is geweest op een gegeven moment.
Okay. Ja, ook een tijdje in de strip streamen.
Ze stopte ook volgens mij. Maar het was ook een hel van een baan volgens mij. Dat je overal heen moet. Elke dag buiten staan ergens waar iets is.
Ik was van Radio Patapoe, die doet het ook, weet je dat?
Die gaat er bijna onderdoor. Dus ik vaak zeg, ik doe dat toch niet.
Dat is therapie.
Nou ja, weet ik niet.
Bovendien is dat radio en dat is toch...
dat is waar ook. Ja. Radio Patapoe.
Een ander verhaal is dat natuurlijk.
Action en, en kunst.
Ja,
en,
kunst,
en
cultuur
en
informatie. Actie
en vuile data.
Vuile data. Ja, ik zal me meer focussen bij die radio-uitzendingen op foute data, onbruikbare data, storing voor de AI. Want dat kunnen we wel gebruiken.
Zo gaan we dat doen.
Ruimteruis.
Nou, dit klinkt al een beetje afrondend. Ik zie ook op de klok van 1 uur is onderweg.
Razendsnel gaat de tijd voorbij.
Ja, die komt aangesneld. Jezus. Gelukkig hebben we dan toch het soort van herbeleving van de volkenblokkade kunnen doen.
Ja. Geen Krulli, geen Ingeborg.
Nee.
Geen hoofdgast.
Ja, de hoofdgast staat buiten, maar die wil niet naar binnen komen.
Die lopen gewoon door, de zon schijnt. Toen het regende kwamen ze binnen, maar nou niet meer.
Dat is het, hè. Het zijn eigenlijk gelukszoekers.
Wij weerspiegelen de tijdgeest.
Ja, wel blij met regen.
Als altijd.
Spiegelende tijdgeest.
Maar wij zijn de Delta, dat blijft hangen.
Wij zijn de Delta?
Ja, dat zei ze.
Oké. Okay. Van de Delta naar de Oergel. Nee, de Oergel, niet zeggen. Hey, maar ik weet het niet hoor. Oh ja, dat linkje, doe dat linkje. Dat moet er wel bij hoor, want ik vind het zo'n... Ik was even de evaluatie nu. Voordat de eindtune erin komt. Nee, zo samen voorlezen. Het is toch ook wel moeilijk te luisteren. Als luisteraar wat er nou gezegd wordt, denk ik.
De klachten?
Om en om. Ja, dat weet ik. Oh, god. Daarom verschillende stemmen. Nee, dat begrijp ik ook. Want dan kan je er makkelijker doorheen ploegen. Maar oké. Wel goed hoor. We moeten ook stelling nemen. Want we zijn een programma zonder mening. Of met een mening.
Ik hoor de eindtune.
Ja.
Daar heb ik wel een mening over. Dat is altijd te vroeg.
Brand laws. Nee hoor, dat is precies
brandmerk was het trouwens. Dus dan was dit het.
Het is dit.
Het is dit.
Ja. Tot volgende week mensen. Het was leuk.
Wafau.
Wafau. Doeg doeg.
Doei.
Dankjewel Bart.
Were charged.
honor the peace of the Passover. Of the Passover.
Up bobbin bino, jalabino. Adam and Eve went up my sleeve, they never got down on Christmas Eve. Come in, Scratch, come mash up this one, yeah. He said one version of Maccabee. Black man's gang. Black ox, baby. Come in now, Pablo, drink it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Read it, shut up. Right, you can move to mommy, you have your center. This is on my white straw. From the back, Lee Perry. King Tommy's beware. Where I'm to get you from the block off. You know, Big Daddy and Big Mama. They don't drag me. This one is coming straight from the man Lee Perry studio. Lee Perry is the engineer of our play. This one is called Here Roar for King Tubby. Play. Play it on the ground.
The boom boom Come on and light my fire. Fulfill my heart's desire. So that by the time I get awake, we'll have some give and take. Go ahead.
The number you have reached is not in service. This is a recording. 1-1-1-1-1
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this, Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hello.
Out in Signal Land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gila.
Hi there.
We have Alex.
Good morning. You do.
And I don't think any of us are in good shape right now. That's one of the reasons, excuse me, I've come down with something. I might have gotten it from Kyle, but I think I gave it to Kyle, so it's been going back and forth between us. I'm not sure how you two are, Rob and Gila. You look okay, but Alex, you're in Greece, and the fact that you're in Greece, I don't mean that to sound like that's, a negative thing. It's a positive thing, but it makes it very difficult for you to do the later show that follows us. Overtime on YouTube. So we're not going to have an overtime tonight because some of us are feeling awful and some of us are far away. Fingers crossed for next week.
Yes, we may look okay, but trust me, we wouldn't sound as okay if we weren't muting the mic every time one of us had an extreme cough from this respiratory thing that we're dealing with in our household.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my God, what's going on? Everybody I know is sick. And it's not just people who are in town for the conference. It's people in different parts of the world. Is this how they're finally going to get rid of us? They're just spreading some kind of disease around? Ooh, this is okay. Well, hopefully we'll make it through the hour or whatever time we have left. So it's good to see you all.
Likewise. Oh, yeah, likewise. Absolutely. And it's 2 a.m., by the way, over here, so I'm plus 7 in Naxos, Greece, which is an island sort of right in the middle of the Mediterranean. In the middle of Greece and Turkey, and it's quite late, it's quite dark, and you guys, obviously nobody on the radio can see me, but the reason why it looks pitch black on the screen here is because I'm at the top of this mountainous area, and I had the lights on outside here on the porch, but it seems like they automatically go off at 2 a.m., and I cannot for the life of me figure out how to put them back on, so I'm using my cell phone light. So to illuminate my face here, which is why I look especially scary to all of you tonight.
Well, wait a minute.
And here we go. And I just lost.
You just disappeared completely. Okay, so what? Your phone, does that have a timeout as well?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Wow, okay.
Wouldn't be surprised.
So you're saying that literally as the show began, your lights went out and you can't figure out how to put them back on.
I have no idea how to put them back on. I even woke my wife up.
Okay,
do you know how to put these lights on? She said no and went back to sleep.
This is a hacker show, so we should be able to, in the hour ahead, figure out how to get Alex to turn the lights on in Greece. Have you tried standing up and waving your arms and that kind
of thing? I have tried that. I've been moving around nonstop looking for the damn switch.
Uh-huh.
Just have no idea.
Have you tried stealing fire from Mount Olympus? I hear that's worked in Greece before.
Yes, that's true. That would be a ways away from me. But that's a great idea.
Maybe making some noise, clapping your hands, shouting really loud. I mean, yeah, it's going to annoy everybody, but
that'd be great.
You might get some illumination out of it.
We'll see. We'll figure it out.
Okay. Well, if anyone has any ideas, please. I don't know. There's nothing
you
to watch.
Email us.
We're not going to check that during the show, though. And
no.
Yeah.
No.
Hey, we did get a lot of letters from last week with the call-in show. It was more than I can recall getting before. We're going to read a few of them here. Dear Off the Hook, the final caller on August 26th lamented how USB connection cables all seem to fail too soon. I agree. The high-quality brands are seldom any better than the cheaper ones, and almost all of them are made in China anyway. To reduce the chance of such failures, most of us already know not to pull on the wire when disconnecting the cable from a device and to instead grasp the plug itself when pulling it out. But also, there is actually a way to grasp the plug that is better than how most of us do that. Simply place your thumb along one of the narrow sides of the connector and your second or third finger on the opposite side, then pull the connector out that way. By not squeezing together the top and bottom surfaces of the plug, you avoid putting pressure on the areas inside of it where the delicate contacts are located. One other tip, some USB connectors, especially Apple's exposed lightning type, will appear to not work when all that was wrong was that the external contact surfaces surfaces needed to be cleaned. A little rubbing alcohol might make a bad cable work like new again. Signed, Kevin. Kevin, thank you for that helpful advice, which hopefully will save some grief for some of our listeners and maybe us.
This is a good plan.
So let me just make sure I understand. So when I'm removing the charger from my phone, I'm supposed to do it sideways and not smushy.
Something like that, yeah. Grasp the plug. And with your second or third finger on the opposite side, your thumb along the narrow side of the connector, pull the connector out that way. Don't squeeze together the top and bottom surfaces of the plug.
I'd never thought about that.
All right, well, now we have something to think about. Here's another letter, good evening, off the hook, regarding the issue brought up by the caller that initially talked about the early Internet as utopia. The Electronic Frontier Foundation has posted articles on their website about a portion of the Internet whose purpose is to benefit the public rather than make a profit. They call it the Public Interest Internet, and you can read more about that at eff.org/issues/public-interest-internet. They say there remains a wider, more diverse, and more generous world on today's Internet, and they give links to relevant articles. In particular, the articles I link to with earlier dates found in higher numbered groups of link to articles discuss specific websites that were made to provide resources to benefit the public. Imagine that, helping people, doing good things, and not just making a buck. So thank you for that letter. And the final letter I have here is, hey, long-time listener, first-time communicator. I'm listening to yesterday's show via podcast and want to throw my appreciation to the caller regarding the X10 standard. This dude is a wealth of information and sent me down a rabbit hole for personal projects. Thanks for the great program. Keep up the great work. And yes, that was quite a call, and we're still talking about it today. So thank you. And if you have any further comments or things you'd like to say to us, oth@2600.com is our email address.
Absolutely. And for those who may have missed last week's show, the X10 standard is worth looking into. It's transmitting control signals for automated things around your house over the plain old power lines. And it's a really fascinating rabbit hole, as our writer went, to go down. And it's very old tech. It's like 50 years old now and really and still useful for a lot of people. So, look it up.
Okay, we have some local news regarding technology, schools in particular. Mayor Mondani and other city officials announced a sweeping new policy today imposing a one-year ban on student use of generative artificial intelligence in New York City public schools from 2K through eighth grade, while limiting screen time for younger students and launching AI literacy lessons for high schoolers. The moratorium takes effect during the 2026-27 school year. It will affect nearly 600,000 students, roughly two-thirds of the city's public school enrollment. So this moratorium is a commitment to getting the future right, says Mondani. We will embrace new technology, but only when it serves our students. City officials said student-facing AI tools and companion chatbots will be prohibited for younger grades, while a coalition of educators, parents, experts, and elected officials studies the technology's impact and recommends next steps. A limited number of high school classrooms will be allowed to participate in closely monitored AI pilot programs, and all high school students will receive twice yearly lessons focused on AI literacy, bias, ethics, and critical thinking. Officials said teachers will still be permitted to use AI for lesson planning and administrative work that meets city safety standards. The policy also introduces new screen time guidelines, including restrictions on one-to-one device use for the youngest students and recommended daily caps of 30 minutes for grades 3 to 5, 45 minutes for grades 6 to 8. Mondani called the move necessary to protect human connection in classrooms, arguing children should develop problem-solving and social skills alongside teachers and peers rather than relying on AI tools. School leaders have been awaiting the guidance for months. Principals were instructed in July to pause software purchases while the administration finalized its policy. Early guidance released in March did not include grade-based AI restrictions or limits on digital devices. The The crackdown comes amid growing concerns from parents, educators, and lawmakers about the impact of artificial intelligence and screen-based learning on children. Parent advocacy groups have pushed for an AI moratorium in schools, while more than half of the city council signed a letter urging City Hall and the Department of Education to halt expanded AI use in classrooms. Thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. And Alex, I want you to get in on this before me, because among us, you're the ones with kids in school in the city. So,
okay, Alex could have just spoken on his own, but go ahead.
Yeah, I had to reposition my camera so you could see me, so I wanted to chime in on this. I think this is mostly good. I can completely understand this. And also, I think that the use of AI in classrooms is a particularly tricky issue as well, because there's a difference between schools purchasing AI-focused or base technologies that they're using as teaching aids. And then there's the separate issue of the home use of AI for kids using large language models, ChatGPT, Perplexity, et cetera, to do their homework for them. Because banning school use here is certainly not going to prevent any kind of home use here. So I don't think that the policy can realistically have anything to do with students actually being prevented from using ChatGPT or any kind of similar tool for home use. I mean, kids are mm-hmm. still going to be using these AI systems to do their homework, to do their learning, to write their essays, write their papers, their draft reports, et cetera. And the gap between detection of the use of AI, especially when it comes to writing, and the non-use of AI and false positives when trying to detect the use of AI is really becoming almost untenable here. There was just an article a few days ago that I was reading here in Greece in the Financial Times weekend section. Basically, the thesis of it was that it's very, very difficult to detect AI-focused writing right now. And there are many, many more false positives, even though people are making great strides in this. So I think banning AI in schools runs the risk of creating a gap between students who know and use AI responsibly, and I know there's going to be some kind of training about this. I don't really trust New York City public schools to get the training exactly right when it comes to the ethics, use, bias, discrimination, et cetera, of these very complicated systems. Having a child in, two children actually, in the throes of the Department of Education in New York City schools doesn't give me a great deal of confidence in their competence, number one. But I think that, there could be, this gap between kids who understand how to use AI responsibly for the use of any kind of work, and maybe we're putting blinders on our eyes and pretending that this is going to affect students and prohibit them from using AI at home. So my fear, though, is that kids are still going to do this. They're just going to do it more poorly than they were doing it before, more surreptitiously than they were doing it before.
Yeah, I don't think they really believe that kids aren't going to be using it at home. It's mostly the parents that have pushed for this legislation in the first place, or this ruling in the first place. So what happens at home, that's up to the parents, obviously. But an environment in school where people aren't just using, students aren't just using artificial intelligence for their learning, I think that's a good step where, you have actual human interaction between students and teachers, like, the old days. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, the angle on this I'm really interested in is the fact that this decision was able to be made at all in this era where we're still in the throes of the AI hype bubble, and all the companies that make these things are selling them so hard to schools and other public institutions and private institutions all over the world. And the fact that the school district or the school system here was able to sort of back off from the hype machine for a second and say, okay, let's question this. Let's question our dependency on this. Let's question the place of this in the system, instead of just doing what I think is very tempting to do, especially in the public sector, which is, okay, you're saying this thing is going to do a great thing for me, so let's just get a contract together and throw it at the kids and let the fallout happen. And as someone whose personal experience in the public school system was extremely flawed, I am always happy to see educators actually like taking a more critical eye toward things like this and focusing more toward actually interacting with the kids and maybe educating them. The idea that they're going to be teaching anything at all about the ethics and bias and so on in AI use for the high school students is very interesting to me as well, because I think we're still very lacking in the area of media literacy education, and this is a step in the right direction for that.
It is, but twice yearly lessons,
mm-hmm.
that, because I think the saturation of so many of these tools and products just grows by leaps and bounds every day. How on earth are they going to plan two lessons for a year? And how is that going to, you know, I fail to understand how that is going to achieve literally anything.
Mm-hmm.
I applaud the early childhood and the elementary and middle school pieces. I'm a little concerned that there had to be it had to be said that they don't want kids in 2K using generative AI. That did make me a little nervous. But the twice yearly lessons part does raise a hackle or two.
Yeah.
But I also understand that, you know, obviously things are in flux and in motion as they have to be.
And it's a baby step, and school is starting in like a week. So
also true.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. School hasn't started yet in the city, has it?
No, it has not.
Oh, it's been going since August in many places, but
it's been going since July in some places.
I don't know what's going on. Kyle, go ahead.
I would just add that it is not going to be one and done. So my only suggestion is that it's something that's ongoing, sort of a living policy that can change and evolve with some of the standards and understanding and changes that the technology itself will experience and make evident to all of us. I don't think you can sort of expect to have it codified and be perfect. So my only thing is that I hope it continues to be something that can be changed and adapt and remain current and not become something that's out of date immediately. So mm-hmm. yeah, as long as they have something down and then they can learn, have lessons learned with feedback and stuff, and then come back in the next school year with something even better and more robust and that really reflects the state of the art.
Go ahead, Alex.
I could see a scenario where teachers actually push back against this policy, because I think that the teachers, and especially the teachers' unions, might feel like they have now the burden shifted over to them to determine what's an improved tool and what's an unimproved tool for their use in the classroom. And then this cutoff at eighth grade seems to be a particularly blunt cutoff as well. You know, I do have a child in middle school, and it's, you know, it seems kind of weird to just have this eighth grade cutoff. But I think that the teachers really do have a case here, because they are the ones who have to figure out what's approved, what's not approved, and without any kind of clear account of how the system or how the city is going to ensure that these rules are promulgated properly, that they're given the correct guidance, that, you know, they know what they can and cannot use when it comes to grading with respect to AI systems, with respect to the generation of lesson plans, et cetera. I think that's going to be a very tricky issue. I could see the teachers union really pushing back on that. I could also see the Department of Education weaponizing this policy against teachers in ways that they may not particularly like. I mean, if you compare this to what's going on right now in South Korea, there's a huge, huge stark contrast, I think, between the South Korean approach with respect to AI and the approach that we're seeing in the United States, and particularly in New York City public schools. Have you been following any of that?
I have no idea what you mean. Go ahead.
Because South Korea basically just announced that all of their citizens are getting unlimited tokens for the use of AI systems for certain purposes, you know, using agentic AI systems to help them with respect to civic responsibilities, et cetera. And their position is essentially that AI and a citizen's right to AI and use it is and use AI is basically a universal public infrastructure, and it's subsidizing access for all citizens in South Korea for access to AI systems and giving them, you know, throughout the entire country, AI literacy lessons about education, strong domestic AI ecosystem support, and not any kind of moratorium or age-based classification system that puts the brakes on this. Rather, they're hitting the gas pedal as fast and as hard as they can when it comes to the use of AI across the entire country. So if we compare what we're doing in the United States with respect to AI and what other countries are doing with respect to AI, we may be creating a knowledge gap and a skills gap that becomes untenable and unworkable in the future. I'm not sure if that's the case. I'm just presenting the other argument. I actually don't really think that will be the case. I think what we're doing in the United States and pushing back against data centers and having these moratoriums on the use of AI in classrooms are good because we want people to be people and humans to be humans. And I think that, and this is very consistent with the position I've taken on this show for the last decade or so, but I think that the best bulwark against any kind of nonsense, any kind of specious political activity is the gray matter within our own brains. And we can't rely on any kind of large language models or AI systems to detect fallacious reasoning, to detect any kind of fraud in the political sphere, all these types of things that are civic responsibilities and duties of any human being, we have to do ourselves. I think we need to continue to have that approach to how we educate human beings. But I do think there is some, I think, reason to reconsider our positions in light of what the rest of the world is doing.
Well, first of all, the rest of the world is just South Korea, according to what you've said. And I haven't heard any questioning as to the risks that they're embarking upon by allowing this unfettered access. The thing with access to AI, it's different than using AI. AI is subjective. There can be very beneficial AI, and there can be AI that is used to subvert the way you think and to believe things that are not true. We've seen all the horror stories. So, they're opening up a Pandora's box. But are they really talking about giving this unlimited access to second graders? Because that's what we're talking about here in New York, between second grade and eighth grade. That is what we're talking about. And whether or not it's a good idea for kids to use AI as if it is an essential learning tool. And honestly, I don't believe it is. I think it's a tremendous help if you know what you're saying, if you know what you're asking for, and these are things that you learn over time. I'm in favor of AI. I use it a lot, but I don't use it as a crutch. I don't use it as a substitute. I use it as an enhancement. I don't think second graders are capable of that yet. And I think it's important for them to develop a relationship with their teachers and their textbooks and to learn how to learn before they start using tools like this. You know, we feel the same way about other enhanced tools.